The Christina Borgeson Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to the Christina Borgeson Show on TNT Radio. Today with your guest host, Dirk Pohlmann from Berlin, Germany. My colleague and friend Christina, I'm an admirer of her work since I got to know her during the production of one of my documentaries about 15 years ago, asked me to be her substitute to do the show today. I have a special guest for you, Oliver X, a man from Germany who wants to stay anonymous. He contacted me because together with my colleague Markus Fiedler, I have a German YouTube program called Geschichten aus Wikihausen, which translates to something like Stories from Wikiville. We dive down the rabbit hole into the dusty recesses of Wikipedia, into the bunker area. Wikipedia pretends to be a collaborative, open access online encyclopedia where anybody can participate, but in fact it is something very different. And this is the story I want to tell you today with Oliver. It's the story of Dremlevo, Operation Dreieck, the Nazi Generalplan Ost. In these operations, one-third, I repeat, one-third of the Belarusian population was killed. And then the memory of these crimes was deleted in the German Wikipedia. So, Oliver, do you hear me? You are in Belarus right now. Do you hear me? Can we talk?
Yes. Yes, yes, okay. We can talk. It's right. I'm in Brest, the city of Brest in Belarus.
Yeah, very good. Then I think we first have to explain maybe the story really from the beginning. About 1 year ago, you were traveling to Belarus. Maybe you can explain to us what you encountered there.
Yeah, last year I was invited to Brest, the city of Brest. And I went to Brest and during my stay in Brest, I get the information that there is a village called Dremlevo beside Brest, approximately 35 kilometers outside of Brest, that there is a village burned down by the German forces in World War II, and not only burned down the village, also burned the people of the village inside the houses. When I heard it, I couldn't believe it really, and I said, I was here with Frank, and I said, hey, let's get there, let's go there and have a look. We are here, and we are Germans, and they are telling us that there is an amazing, mind-blowing thing happened, and we went over there, and we get shocked. We get really shocked. There's a monument for this village, and that's only reminds you the village. The other places of the village went to the agriculture again. So nothing's left from the village, only a monumental. And we heard the story by an historian, a Belarusian historian, and he explained step by step what happened all to the village. And after hearing that, we all get a heart attack, because we have no knowledge about what happened here in Belarus. We, my friends and I, we get more than shocked. It's near to a heart attack. What German forces done in World War II. So
I want to get in there. I consider myself a specialist for the history of World War II and for the Cold War. And I knew some of these things, but I have to say that I don't know anybody in Germany who knew about the scope that you described to me, the things done in Belarus. So we all know very much about the Holocaust. We have that in the. I had it, for example, for 8 years during my school time. it was always in the vicinity of the Holocaust, so to speak, the history what got taught. But the fact that the German troops devastated Russia, they killed 27 million people in Russia, and that is hardly known, but Belarusia is really like a blank white spot. So it's not only you, this is what I want to stress, it's not only you who has no knowledge of that. It is very common in Germany that people don't know about these events in Belarusia. But carry on, please.
Yes, we have to, what I understand there is, it's not only Dremljevo. Dremljevo is one of 186 villages in total that could not rebuild again because of lack of people. I had heard today, a couple of hours a day, that's why I come a little bit late to the hotel, an interview with the historian, the historic man, and I made an interview with him, and I get more information about that, what happened there. Dremljevo was the start point of Operation Triangle. And Triangle, I learned today, there is a triangle, Operation Triangle, more in Russia. So we're talking about two operations, Triangle, one in Russia, one in Belarus. And Dremljevo was the starting point for Operation Triangle. And it started in the beginning of September 1942 and ended in November 42. And they killed the German forces, and it was almost police forces. That's totally new for me. I never saw that German police forces killed people. And when they stopped Operation Triangle, they killed almost 44,000 and a couple of hundreds civilians, not soldiers, civilians. So what I learned here is we are talking about a Holocaust on the people of Belarus. There's a Holocaust on the people, the Jews. And the second is what's new. It's new for me. I never heard this before, that we have here an Holocaust on the people of Belarus. And nearby Minsk is a national monumental about all the killings in Belarus. And there is a stone plate, let's call me it a stone plate, with an amount, the writing on the stone plate, an amount of 2 million, please keep it in mind, 2,230,000 people. And they know what I learned today in the interview with the historian. That's not all. That's an old amount. They have newly information, and it went through, or it goes up through 3 million civilians. It's maybe 3 million civilians. So that we are talking about killings, Jews of an amount of 6 million, and here only in Belarus we are talking about 3 million civilians. So
what was the full population of Belarus? You have to give that number.
The historian says it's not. The border lines changed a little bit in that time in World War II and before. They created the Soviet Union, and the borderline between Russia, between the Ukraine and Belarus and the Baltic states were not so clear. I have the interview complete on video. It was an interview with the Belarusian local television. So later, I will send you, if you want, a link to this interview, and you can see it. It's in Russian and German language available. So, how can I say it? It's disgusting. It's I don't know. I have no words for that. What happening? And the.
But after to get back to that, I think what I learned is that. In the beginning, it was said that about one-fourth of the population was killed, and now the number is rising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's more into, is it correct?
Yeah. Yes, it's correct. It goes up to one third. One third of the population of Belarus was killed. Was killed by German forces. However, police troops or SS divisions or normal soldiers, whatever, after 3 years of occupation, approximately one third of the civilians died. I have no word for that. It's unbelievable, and that's shown in the National Memorial in Katyn nearby Minsk.
This Katyn is not the Katyn where the Polish officers were killed by the Soviet troops in World War II. It's also Katyn, but it's same name, but a different city. Yeah, that is important that people don't mix it. I think we have to explain it a little bit, because what you encountered is already difficult for Germans, who this is our history. But we don't know about it. Mm-hmm. I think we have to explain to an Australian audience that it wasn't a war where you have soldiers fighting soldiers, and then you have casualties, you have what is called collateral damage in the civilian population. The main difference, which has to be understood, that this kind of war happened in the West. Against France, and then with the British in Air Force fightings and so on. And then after the landing, this was the, let's say, normal war, so to speak, happened in the West. But in the East, the plan was to eradicate the population, to create an area where German populations could build up new villages. And this is what I call the Generalplan Ost. That was the name of it. It's not that I called it. So the idea was to have a population that would get an education which is barely able, they would be barely able to read and do basic calculations. They would be slave labor. The population was, the plan was to get to 25% to kill off the rest. And what happened is when the German troops advanced, very strange situations. For example, in Ukraine, sometimes they were greeted because people hoped that the reign of the Soviet state would be over, and some of them were happy, but that only lasted for a few hours or days, because then other things happened, and the plan was to kill off 75% of the population, and then they were already, for example, for generals, they had letters and envelopes where they would have castles in this area, knights' castles, where they would own whole areas of the land and could do whatever they wanted on it. So this was planned, and it meant it's a war of eradication. And the final thing I want to say to that is we had an exhibition in Germany around the millennium, which was called Crimes of the Wehrmacht. And it was under a lot of attack in Germany, because the official version was it was all the SS. The Wehrmacht was normal soldiers, and they were fighting honorably. And then during, this is from the scientists, and it was met with disbelief, and people didn't like it. The people who are still alive from World War II, it turned out to be that, for example, the first ones who were involved in the mass killing of civilians, and that was extremely cruel, burning people to death, clubbing people to death to save ammunition, were the police squadrons. So policemen from Germany got into special units which were under command of Heinrich Himmler. And these were also the ones, I think, in Dremlevo, which was, you visited the first village. It's only 183 persons who died there, but it is the first village in this operation. Is that correct, or can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, correct. Yes, totally. The historian said today that I asked him if there may be a connection to the OUN, to the Stefan Badera nationalists, to the Nazis of them. And he said,
Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, that is OUN. OUN, an organization of Ukrainian nationalists, that was Stepan Bandera.
It's no relationship to them, definitely. And because maybe it's one point why they shut down my article in the German Wikipedia, though we can talk about later a little bit. What happened in Drambrio war are police guys, normal guys.
Policemen.
And that's very, very, policemen. And there were policemen supported from the German forces here. For every village, one man, it was local guys. From Drambrio, there was a local policeman.
I can tell when I was a kid, we were in summer holidays in Austria, and our family was together with two other families. One was friends and friends of the friends, and one of them was a policeman. It was a criminal police. He was in the murder investigation department, and he was he was a very kind person. And my parents talked, and the grown-ups talked, and I listened to it in the summer at the lake, sitting there. And he said, and I recall that very well because my ears got bigger and bigger. He was talking about the things that were done in Poland and Belarus and Ukraine by the police. And he said, I always thought when I was in this police squadron in World War II, God have mercy on us if we lose the war. What will they do with us? And then his wife interrupted him and said, stop talking about it. Tonight you will be screaming in the bed again, throwing your arms around, and I have all the trouble to get you to calm you down again. That was very impressive for me as a kid. So I encountered that, but I didn't understand. I didn't understand what I heard, because at that time, nobody really knew that it was policemen. I mean, police, for me, it was very interesting. He was a guy from the murder department, and I asked him questions about how to do an investigation and so on. You can imagine what a kid would ask. But for him, he knew something about that. And then we had in Germany, in connection with this exhibition, which I said, there was a very important historic work where an historian, Frank Bajura, he followed what the people from the police departments, where they came from, what kind of people were these. The name of the story was Usual Men, or Just Normal Men. They were middle class. They were very well educated. They came. They were just normal people. And they ran into this extermination business, and then after the war, many of them had good jobs in the German state system. And after the war, the same happened again. And I think this is also one thing that we need to understand. Unlike with the Auschwitz cases, and also with other cases of extermination of the Jews, the Belarusian, this extermination in Belarus, there was not one trial in Germany after World War II dealing with that. Is that correct, or did you hear something else today?
I think that's correct. I heard in the comments down under our video, there is maybe one trial. But if it's only one or two, that's nothing. Yeah, what happened in Belarus?
What I read about the trial was it's a trial in the Soviet Union, so it was no trial in Germany. This is what I meant. I mean, there were trials in Poland and so on, but not in Germany.
I asked the historian today, if you know such about the bad guys, they know names, they know ranks in the German forces, you know a lot stuff, really a lot stuff about the what happened. And I asked him, come over here to Belarus ever, German, what's the name in English, trial forces, Staatsanwalt, guys like this.
State attorney, and state
said,
attorney.
No. State attorney, yeah, state attorney. And they said, no, never ever, never ever. And they know so much stuff about the bad guys. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. It's like a joke, huh? A bad joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Another information what I learned today is we are talking about 9,200 villages, which were totally destroyed or only destroyed sometimes 2, 3, 4 times. When the German troops went inside the villages and destroyed them, 9,200 villages. Of course, that means that of course the amount of approximately 3 million people who died in the World War II or under the occupation of the German forces. Explained the high numbers, the high number of the 9,200 villages. It's mind blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I tried, we come to the story. You approached me because after you heard all these things, you looked into Wikipedia, and you tried to find something on Dremlevo, and there was nothing. And there was nothing on Operation Triangle, Unternehmen Dreieck, as it was called in German. So it was a strange void. I wouldn't have imagined that there is something. There's a lot of articles in the German Wikipedia on World War II and about Nazi atrocities, but this has been missing. So you noticed that, and then you please describe what your decision was when you noticed that.
Last year, when we were the first time in the village called Dremlevo, it's not longer a village. The village doesn't exist anymore since 11/9/42. After the historian told us the brutalities, the story about Dremlevo, I went to him and said to him, it was an idea, wherever it comes from, it was inside of me, however, I told him if he's able to write what he explained to us in a form, the kind of letter, send it to me per email, and he did it. He wrote a letter, he wrote an article, very, very detailed, and I took this email and went to a translator and said to him, I need this in German language, and now you have to understand that it's not a normal article. It needed more, approximately 1 year. 1 year to get the translated article in German to my desk. So, and even it was on my desk, and I started reading, I found an error. I found found something that in German that sounds a little bit crazy. And I went again to my translator and said, hey, what's this here? And he said, Oliver, that's all what I can say to you, what I can write down. That is what I get from the historian. So I get in contact with the historian, and we fix it. And he said, "Oliver, if it is not clear, please delete it. Let's keep straight, only the truth." He said, "If there is something unclear, delete it." So I deleted one sentence, and after that, I get in fight with by myself and said, okay, and now you have here a fantastic article. And in the meantime, I made a Google search for Dremlevo, Operation Triangle in German. in Germany, and I did not found really stuff about. And there are two, three hits, but that's not all. That's not what I faced here in Belarus. So I decided to make an article in Wikipedia because I saw it at that time. It was in July this year, a couple of weeks ago. I decided if it comes to Wikipedia, Wikipedia is a well-known encyclopedia in the world and in Germany also. And I thought, and I thought, hey, okay. Maybe they will see 10,000 people will read this article and get information what happened in the past. And I wrote it, put it into the Wikipedia, and after a little fight with Wikipedia fight with the technique to get it online, after I get it online, the article, please listen now carefully. It's so amazing. It's so crazy. After 180 seconds, 3 minutes, not only that the article was deleted, there was a ban. They put a ban on the article to put it again into the Wikipedia under the same name. And that drove me crazy because I was not able to understand this. I have no clue. I was shocked. I went inside my home up and down and talked to myself. What's that? What's that? What's that? Are they crazy? What are they doing? This is a high value article. It's not only stuff from something from a guy next corner. It's a high value article, but they deleted. They deleted and banned it from Wikipedia. So thanks to God, let me say it this way, I get in connection with you, Mr. Pullman, and we made a video about what happened in Wikipedia. So maybe over this way, we will see what at least Wikipedia is. And in my opinion, what I face now with Wikipedia is not what it shows to us. That's my image of what I see from Wikipedia. We have to be carefully.
Let me get into that because that was the reason why we started this show, Stories from Wikiville. That really started. I will tell this shortly so you get an idea. We noticed that several people, my colleague and me, Markus Fiedler, he was at that time a teacher for music and biology, he's a computer buff because of the music stuff, he dove deep into into Wikipedia, and he did a documentary on YouTube, and then he contacted me, and we decided to work together, me with my background as investigative journalist, and we looked into, there are several articles which are immediately re-edited if something is written in there. And what people usually think, and the picture that is painted of Wikipedia, is that it's a very open system. It's a worldwide gathering of worldwide knowledge. Everybody can work on it. They always complain, we don't have enough people of color, we don't have enough women, we need to be a bit more diverse than we are. It's mostly people who sit in front of their computers all day, but as if that was the problem. But then when we looked into the statistics, and we found that Wikipedia, to give you a figure, 80% of the articles are written by 1% of the authors. And we found that we were looking, that's the same figures, by the way, for United States. The University of Purdue found the same figure in a survey they did in 2015, I think. That's the same thing. So these are people, and then you have to understand that you can always try to write something in Wikipedia. And this is what happened to you. You can try to write something, and then you will notice that sometimes things are blocked immediately. They're deleted immediately if it's on something that somebody finds interesting, where it is politically interesting. Sometimes the people who wrote that article, I think this didn't happen to you, but sometimes they are blocked immediately for lifetime. So you write something in Wikipedia and you're thrown out immediately. And because the people inside Wikipedia vote for their hierarchy, for the higher up, so to speak, for the administrators and for the bureaucrats, as they're called. That's not my invention. That's what they call themselves. So there's a ranking, and the oversighters and so on, the people who can say this goes into there, they are voted, but they only voted by the people who work inside Wikipedia. So by making sure that people like you immediately disappear with their stuff, then they make sure they have an in-group. And this seems to be the fuel that they're running on, that they have the power to decide what is true or what isn't true. And they can put their own political views, their own ideological views on top of everybody else. And this is what attracts strange people. And there should be a possibility to prevent that, because the basic idea that everybody can write is a good idea. That's more or less the system of science, where people of knowledge in open discussion discuss things until they have a consensus. But here it is a small group. We called it the Junta in Germany. It's about 80 to 200 people. It's floating a little bit, but they're highly active people. And we noticed that some of them were hyperactive. And I was very interested in one guy they're all anonymous. That is the problem. You are now anonymous, because what you have to fear is when people get your name, that they will call your employer, they will call your bank to cancel your account, they will call your employer to cancel your job, they will call your tenant or the landlord that your house should be. How can you rent a house out to somebody? You will be under fire. This is what I have encountered personally when I started to report on Wikipedia. It is very tough what you have to face. And because they're anonymous, they are like snipers from the jungle. You only feel the bullets coming, but you don't know what happens. So this is why I also told you it's a good idea to stay anonymous. But we tried to find out. One of the guys was really, really strange. He was writing, he had a specialty on Israeli security policy. He had a specialty on ancient uniforms in a way. And he was writing about people from the left party in Germany. And I noticed that some of the articles were really putting people down, and some were up writing, praising some people or diminishing them to nothing, to idiocy. And so I got interested, and we tried to find out who he was. And it was a long and tedious work. I don't go into that. It took me about 3 months. And finally, we had a clue how to find him. And then we managed to be sure that it's him. And it was very weird, because this guy that we found was a member of the left party. He once tried to become member of parliament, of the federal parliament. he had never had a chance to get elected, but he was on the list. And obviously his method of doing political work and having a greater effect was doing it on Wikipedia, because then what he wrote could be depicted as truth. Other people would read it as the truth, because what you expect from an encyclopedia is the shortest, unbiased version of information on a topic. An encyclopedia is not a political free speech thing where you can give comments. It should be very factual, very short, nothing aside, no political opinion, definitely. But exactly because this is what you expect from an encyclopedia, and because they have the power to go the other way, this is what they are attracted of. They can do that. So we found, for example, this guy had been a conscientious objector, but he later tried become an officer of the German forces. He was a Catholic, but he switched to, by marrying a Jewish woman, he tried to switch to become a Jew, and he managed it. So it was a very, very strange. He was exactly writing on all the things he had strong political or personal opinions about, which is what you shouldn't do. If you are in science, you have to show that there is a conflict of interest if you're so close to things. But this is what attracted him. And then we published him and told him, look, this is the guy who's writing. And we told other members of parliaments of the left party. And you cannot imagine what happened to us, because they were shocked. They couldn't imagine that it was him. But then they found out, he said, this is the guy who was smearing me all the time. Yeah. So and then we got a letter from his attorney, and he said, I have the right to be anonymous by the rules of Wikipedia. And you doxed me. You put me my name on the public, and you will be sued to stop this. And then so we went into trial. To cut a long story short, we won two times. It was even that the German court said that he was so manipulative in his writings that they said, Wikipedia, there's no right to anonymity if somebody can find out who you are. If you write this style of political stuff, if you write about arithmetic or chlorophyll or the frog diseases or whatever, then it might be different. But if you go to political issues, it is definitely mm-hmm. something that you have to stop. But we come back, we go to the advertisement block now, but we come back with you and your story after I explained a little bit about what Wikipedia is, because I think we need to know.
Has it come to this? California approves bill to punish doctors who spread COVID misinformation.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Dr. Marty Makary, a renowned Johns Hopkins public health expert, explains the new California bill.
Well, this is a major step backwards in promoting scientific dialogue. It specifically says that you can lose your medical license if you say something that, quote unquote, contradicts the contemporary scientific consensus.
Did you get that? If you disagree with the World Health Organization or Anthony Fauci, you are spreading misinformation and can be punished as a doctor. These policies are spreading. Australia has warned doctors they are, quote, obliged to follow public health messages and warned them against authoring papers that contradict the public health message. We've arrived at the dystopian Great Reset. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here we are back, Dirk Pullman and his guest, Oliver X, he's right now in Belarus, a German, and he told us about he told us the beginning of his ordeal in Wikipedia. I just wanted to close down my part there about explaining Wikipedia. One thing that we found about this guy that I just mentioned is that he wrote an article about a torture prison which is called, what's it in English? I don't know. Building 1391. And it was famous or infamous. There had been articles in The Guardian about it, several German newspapers. The UN Torture Committee was researching that. It was a terrible place. And I'd read about it before. And then I looked into Wikipedia. And in Wikipedia, the only problem with this installation was that it was not known where it was. The Israeli military officials would not put it on a map. And the guy who wrote the article even said that sometimes the wards, the guards of this prison would drive people at home during vacation so that they could see their family. So it sounded like a very humane thing, but it was not. It is a place where the cells are 2 times 1 meter or smaller. They are painted black. They have an air condition which is turned to heat in the summertime and to cold in the wintertime. And they raped prisoners during interrogation. That was the allegation that were Newsweek, for example, also wrote about it. So I wondered who was the guy who wrote this article in Wikipedia. And I looked into the English Wikipedia, and the article was much better. It was more accurate. And it was exactly the guy that I told you about who chose to become a Jew, the guy from the left-wing party who also wrote about his fellow parliamentarians there. So this, when we published it, and then, as I said, we won the cases. We have more cases coming. And then in connection with that, we had 3 witnesses who testified for us. Of course, we were attacked on the basis that we're all anti-Semites. So 3 of the witnesses that helped us were Jews who were under attack by the same guy. They're Israeli peaceniks, and he attacked them as a German for being anti-Semitic and so on. So they testified in court for us. So then he attacked them again in Wikipedia. And there was another trial, and this is the first trial ever worldwide where somebody succeeded that Wikipedia would have to pay a penalty to him. In Germany, these sums are not high. It's not like American law or so. It was some 8,000 euros that he would have to pay for that. He went into the second round, and then unfortunately he won the second round on the basis, and now buckle up, that in Wikipedia it's freedom of speech what is important. So you can write in an encyclopedia, you can pose as a neutral observer, but you could write whatever you want because you can give your opinions there. So people should know that. In Germany, from the court perspective, this will be not be the final word on that, I'm quite sure. But it was that this is legal to manipulate in Wikipedia because, and you can do it secretly. So this is what you ran into unknowing. And this is why I say you're kind of an ideotypic typical case, because you were shocked about what you learned in Belarus. You noticed that it's not known. You didn't know. Other people don't know it. And I have to tell you, when I tried to look it up in Google, there's hardly anything. I had to go to Russian and Belarusian websites and go via Google Translate to find information. There's nothing in English, not really nothing. Very, very few, very little information in English. There's very little, close to none in German language. And so what the people in Wikipedia did, I think the guy that you contacted made a short check and he didn't find anything. So he deleted it because he has the power to do that. But were you sitting there? Were you noticing it's 90 seconds? Or how did you get to, I mean, 90 seconds is strange. We have to talk about that too. But how did you notice that you were deleted? Okay, so Oliver dropped out. I'm waiting for him to come back. So that is important. Why is it important that it's 90 seconds? Because if you are deleted after 90 seconds, it's probably not because somebody was occasionally going over your article. It looks like there's a technical feature that gives something like a warning lamp if there's maybe an article with some code or buzzwords in it. I don't know. But 90 seconds for deletion. He wasn't even, the article is about 4 to 5 pages. So you cannot really read that in 90 seconds. So the question would be how, because he for some time thought, as far as I know, that his article is online. We still don't have him back, so I go on talking until we have him back on the phone there. The idea that I had was if he had any clue if there was something, but what I heard from him was he did not know how that happened. And he was just astonished. He was shocked. He didn't really know what he would encounter. And I can tell you, this is something that is very usual. And we were going back and forth into why somebody would be interested to delete this, because the people that are in control of the German Wikipedia They always say that they must make sure that there are no neo-Nazis, no right-wing radicals, nor extreme right persons. They always depict Wikipedia being in danger of taken over by these people. So they are the bulwark. They are the left bulwark. They're the left bulwark against these. I have to type something in just a second. That will make sure that Wikipedia is not under attack from these right-wing people. So we were very astonished that especially this topic about Nazi atrocities and World War II was deleted. And then we thought maybe it's because in these... that we... they're having issues with the phone line from both sides. So I go on talking to bridge the situation here. They were, it could have been, we were thinking that because the, as I said, the OUN, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, the Stepan Bandera people, which is a topic. It's a topic in Germany, it's a topic, I don't know if it's a topic in Australia, but how much these people have to say in the government. They have no strong numbers, but they declared themselves to be very influential, much more influential than their numbers were, for example, in the Maidan uprising. So we were thinking maybe it's that, because it could have a connection to the current conflict. But as he just told me, I didn't know that, as he just told me, there was no connection to the Stepan Bandera people in this operation, so Dremlevo and Triangle. But it could also have been that it doesn't fit into the picture if you talk about a genocide, which it definitely is, on the Belarusian population in these times when you want to depict the Russian and Belarusian population as attackers and monsters and whatever. Yeah, so it doesn't fit into the frame if we suddenly start talking about it. But it was not, he did not do it because he had a political intent. It was because he ran into this, into these two monuments and was shocked about the numbers. And I was myself. I can tell when I drove through Russia by car in 2017, all the way up to Chechnya, which was quite a trip, yeah, and it was shocking in the western part. So in Ukraine, which has lost about a quarter of the population in World War II, and then going on to Belarus, and there were villages where, if they were lucky, there were no men left. If they were unlucky, the whole village was erased. And that was something that at that time shocked me, because you were meeting people who could talk about that. Every family which you encountered, they had a story to tell about this. And this is something that is not really well known in Germany. I have to say that we don't learn it at school. So I drove through these Western countries, and then I had done a documentary in 1999 about prisoners of war. And I noticed that I talked to people who had done slave labor in Germany, and a lot of women, and it was a lot of women from this area. So I didn't talk to a lot of women, I talked to four or five, but they were telling the stories that they were, the men were killed, the children were killed, and they were mass transported to Germany to work as slave labor in the companies. And in the companies, it was a clear ranking. If you were an American aircrew or British aircrew, you were on top. You were treated according to the Geneva Convention. Germany treated the Americans and the British fair. You could say it was fair treatment according to the rules. And then it went down. It went down in the ranking, on the racial ranking. And the lowest rankings in the end of the war had the Russians had, and the Italians, because the Italians were fighting with Germany until 1943-44, and then they changed sides, so they're considered traitors, and they were treated as bad as the Russians. But the Russians were always on the lowest end. It was terrible. It was a life-threatening situation to them. It got better through the war because they were needed in the beginning. And this is what, in this time, what happened in the beginning when the German army marched into Russia and had enormous amount of prisoners of war, more than 1.5 million in the battle of Vyazma and Brzezinsk, the area where he also was. And what they did is they just built a fence around this mass of people and let them starve to death. I had interviewed a soldier who was talking about the cannibalism that they had to retreat to if they wanted to survive. That is a very dire situation. But this is in the beginning, it was simply, I read the reports from the German army, and it was not SS, it was also German army and the police that they told, and they simply considered these people unusual eaters or unnecessary eaters. They would take away from the rations of the German soldiers, so they should just disappear by dying. It's like in the James Bond movie. Do we expect me to talk? No, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond. So that was the same situation. That is what Oliver encountered. And he was so shocked by it that he wanted to have the word out. And then he thought, how can I do it? Well, I go to Wikipedia because it's an encyclopedia. And nothing about that was in there. We have an article about Generalplan Ost. It's quite good. It's not bad. It's not good. There was nothing on Triangle. And, of course, Remlevo also didn't exist in Wikipedia. So, this is really the first story, why he wanted to write it. And then he came into the trouble of trying to put it online and having to find out that it was deleted after 90 seconds. I think, as far as I talked to him, he didn't notice it immediately. He was informed because he wrote an email to some of his friends. We have a great, there's a great article now. It's online. You can watch it. And they said, where? And it was gone. So, see you after the hour and hope back with Oliver.